One, two. Brilliant. The subject of death can be either morbid, mystical, or magnificent. It really does depend on how you and I view it. Men and women have wrestled with the concept of death since the beginning of time. For those who view believe in Adam and Eve, well, they lived in perfection. But even they were perplexed by the warning that God gave them, that if they didn't get things quite right, that could lead to the certainty of death. Every religion somehow wrestles with this concept, as does every atheist. There are many things in life we can avoid, delay, or overcome. Death is not one of these. This is one that we are all facing, relationally, for everyone that we know, personally, for ourselves. Now, John Hosier, a good friend and theologian, once said that he had read a report claiming that the death rate was falling. "Not true," he said, "except for a very few, and all of them that people might think haven't are debatable. The rate is 100%, always was, is, and always will be. The death rate is not falling. Whoever we are, whatever stage in life we find ourselves in, whatever our outlook on life and eternity, there is one certainty. We will one day face the reality and the finality of death. Yet we may well ask the question, what happens when we die? And maybe even try to avoid the answer. But the fact is that whatever our philosophy, whatever our theology, even our cosmology is, how we answer this question has a direct and profound effect on how we live. What happens when we die? Morbid, mystical, or magnificent? We have to make a choice. I think that there are three types of ways that we can face this. We can look at this. One, I call the candle in the wind. One, the circle of life. And the third, heaven or hell. And on that video clip, we saw all three of those referred to. And I want to, just kind of have a look at these three this morning, doing a little bit of exploring together. So please, don't just sit and listen to what I have to say. But think for yourself as we go through these together. The first of these that I want to look at is the candle in the wind. It's a song that we all know. It's a song that's been used. And even more recently, in the last few years, was used to refer to a famous person. What does candle in the wind mean? Well, many years ago, I met a man and who was convinced that there was no life and no more to life than the years that we have. We were outside a small town in America, and I was speaking to him about things of life and death. And from where we were standing, he looked up on the hillside, and you could see the graveyard there. And he very matter-of-factly pointed to the graveyard and said, "That's the end of it. I'm here now, a few years' time, I will be there, and that is it." And many people have held this as their philosophy, but far less now than maybe a few years ago, I would tend to think. Maybe that is you today. And although I may differ with you in that respect, I do respect your opinion. You may be here and you may be thinking, well, once I'm gone, it's gone. It's over. One of the people in the video clip referred to that and said she just felt that was it. It's a rational view. Dust to dust, ashes to ashes. We came from dust, we return to dust. Ashes to ashes, literally. No concept of a soul or energy force or afterlife. It's rational. It's an easy view, not necessarily just cold and calculated, just matter of fact. I live for today, I live for tomorrow, but after that there's no real worries or concerns. It may well be rooted in a worldview that's based on an evolutionary chain of events. No spiritual realm is involved, so we just have what we see, what I can feel, what I can touch, what I can smell, what I can taste now is all that there is. Now, if you're coming from that different viewpoint, or from that viewpoint, I wonder, really, how you make life choices at times. Because as I said earlier, I believe that what your view of what happens when we die will affect how we live. If you come into that view, life choices, your sets of values and your morals, where do those come from? Is it just instinct? Is it just situational ethics? Is it just life happens and then it's gone? The very fact that you are here this morning now, listening to me, and if you hold that view, the candle in the wind, I think that indicates that actually you are searching for something more. Something that gives a reason beyond the gravestone that sits on a hillside. I don't have a wide experience of being around people when they die. I have been around a few. I've been around more who have been around people who have died. And the one thing that I've found very much in common is that even at the very end, even those who I've been around who have said, that's it, it's going to be over, at the very end, they seem to be searching for more. So if there is more, I just wonder what it is.
Morning. I get to sit on the sofa this week, and please welcome my good friend, Ed Osborne. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Pete.
I have it on good authority that although we're looking this morning at the subject of what happens when you die, that you've actually never died.
Not yet.
Okay, cool. Ed, it's great to have you and your family back here in Aylsham. You moved back here last year, I think it was, March 2011. And of course, I remember when you used to live in Aylsham a few years before that. But I guess your story actually starts before you even came to Aylsham the first time. So do you want to tell us a bit about your story and where you originally came from?
I originally came from my mother. I was born and brought up in... Actually, that's a lie, I wasn't born in Goulston. I was brought up in Goulston. On the coast, and we went to Anglican church, went to St Andrew's Church in Goulston most Sundays till I was about 14, which was a point that Mum said I could make my own decision about not going, and my decision was to not go because I was bored with it. I knew all the liturgy and all the prayers and everything else, but it meant nothing to me, and that's it. I carried on with my life. It was about that age, actually, when I started dabbling with drugs, just a little bit through my last couple of years at school, got to college and started doing it a bit more, doing different drugs, doing it more and more frequently. Then I went to university, and I just found myself in this downward spiral of doing harder and harder drugs more and more often and spending most of my time high, as they call it. Consequently, failed at university. I was doing a degree in jazz piano, failed my first year, made a decision to repeat my first year in year two, didn't get very far through that because I just felt I was too messed up, and I got to the point where I'd realised in my moments of being not high that I was just too twisted, really, and at that point I kind of started feeling that I was missing out on something, so I moved back home.
Okay, so, not the greatest younger years as a youth growing up and getting to university then and perhaps things even getting worse for you, but fantastic that you actually had that self-realisation that something was missing from your life and you decided to make that journey home again and to get out of that whole situation at university life in Manchester. So great. So obviously things got better for you when you moved home, did they?
Yeah, that was the start of the next bit of the journey, really. I didn't actually go home. I went and moved in with my brother. And it was at that time that Johnny, a lot of you here will know Johnny James, it was at that time that I started spending more time with Johnny because he actually moved in with me and my brother as well because he was living in Cromer but going to college in Yarmouth. So he spent 3 nights a week with us. And we had lots of conversations sitting up kind of through till the small hours of the morning. And it invariably ended up talking about God and Jesus and heaven and hell. And the conversations we had were, you know, the real nitty-gritty of stuff. He was arguing his point, I was arguing mine. I didn't believe what he did, and he didn't believe what I did. And it was one day he invited me to church. And despite all the conversations and my kind of negative feelings towards what he was saying, I didn't have any objection to going to church. And so I came along, started coming in just towards the end of 1999. And Johnny brought me here every week. He drove from Cromer to Great Yarmouth to pick me up, brought me to Aylsham. I'd come to church, he'd drive me home and then go back to Cromer. So he really committed himself to bringing me here, and I really praise God for that. And it was after these weeks and weeks of coming to church, not really coming with sort of too much intention, but searching and listening. And just one Sunday morning, God just grabbed a hold of me. It was a preach given by Grantley Watkins about forgiveness. And I was carrying a lot of kind of bad feelings in my heart towards lots of people, including my brother at that time. And then just something released. It's, you know, the old cliche, but I just felt a weight lifted off my shoulders, and I felt love come down on me. And I knew in that moment, in no uncertain terms, that God had got a hold of my life, and I gave my life to Jesus there and then.
Super, super. And what difference has giving your life to Jesus made for you?
In that instance, the difference was instant. literally turned my life on my head. I went home that day. I threw all my drugs away. And never touched drugs again. It was about 2 weeks after that I was in home group with Ian and Jen Delane, and Ian was encouraging us to find promises for ourselves from God in the Bible. And I opened up my Bible, and I read a section from Isaiah, which said, "See, I have taken out of your hand the cup of my wrath that made you stagger. From that cup you'll never drink again." And I knew that it was God saying to me in the way that I could understand that I would never touch drugs again. And that was it. It was instant. I tried giving up drugs, which was half of the reason I moved back from Manchester, from university. And but in that instant, God just took it away from me. So that was, you know, that was a very key thing to sorting me out. And then from then on, just exploring and going deeper with God, I kind of felt... I was really excited to have become a Christian. I wanted to tell more friends about it, tell all my colleagues, but it felt like it was just a bit of a bubble that would burst, and I was really quite afraid that was going to be the reality, that, you know, a few weeks down the line I'd kind of lose the hype and it would all be gone. But it didn't. It just carried on. You know, you get to a certain point in becoming a Christian that it kind of, you get used to it, but it never plateaus. It's always been a climb ever since, a positive climb. You know, I met my wife here. You all know Tara, or some of you know Tara. Went on to get married, have two gorgeous children. And ever since, I've had purpose, I've had meaning, I've had direction. Whereas up to that point, I felt like I was nobody. I'd messed it all up. I had nothing to live for. Yeah. Anyway.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
No problem.
It's been brilliant. Just one last question. What's your favourite donuts, jam or custard?
Five packs.
Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, Ed.
So if there is more, what might that be? If it's not just ending up on Boot Hill, if it's not just ending up as dust to dust, ashes to ashes, what might there be? The second point of view that I'd look at, and again it was referred to in the video, was what I've entitled the circle of life. There is this niggle, that tug, that pull that says there must be more than just dust and ashes. This can't really be the end. Whether this is some sort of reincarnation to another life form, re-entering the cosmic energy flow, ascending to the next level of existence, joining with the universe, the Metachlorians of Star Wars are just floating in some eternal bliss or soup, there must be more. From the ancient religions of Native Americans to more modern-day cartoons and children's programs, we find a concept of a circle of life. And as I said, death is something we all face. 2 weeks ago, this Sunday, I met a man for the first time in my life. I had to go and pick up some equipment that Matthew needed picked up. And I sat in the vehicle waiting for the doors to be unlocked to go in to collect the equipment with a man I'd never met before. The man wasn't able to help to carry the equipment out for his son. I didn't realize why. I thought maybe he was unwell. And I found out a few days later when Matthew came home and said that he was no longer. He twisted his ankle, hurt his foot playing football. He had a blood clot, went to his lungs, and he was gone. A man my age. I met him once. I wonder what his philosophy of life and death was. When we think of, is there a circle of life, this then forces us to consider what we now somehow affects what happens. Sorry, what we do now somehow affects what happens in the next life if we believe in a circle of life. Maybe reincarnation to a better place. Maybe it's resupplying the cosmic energy that never really runs out. But whatever, it makes us face how we live now. Maybe there's no real need to do great exploits, as there will either be more opportunities to come back and do better the next time. Maybe it makes no difference how we live our lives now because, well, we just enter into some energy flow that is somehow then brought back into play at a later date. Henry Ford, a famous man from the States, and if you drive a Ford car now, you will have something in common with him. This is what he said about his philosophy of life. I am in exact accord with the belief of Thomas Edison that spirit is immortal, that there is a continuing center of character in each personality. But I don't know what spirit is, nor matter either, for that matter. I suspect they are forms of the same thing. I never could see anything in this reputed antagonism between spirit and matter. To me, this is the most beautiful, the most satisfactory form of a scientific standpoint, the most logical theory of life. For 30 years, I have leaned towards the theory of reincarnation. It seems the most reasonable philosophy and explains many things. No, I have no desire to know what or who I was once or what or who I shall be in the ages to come. This belief in immortality makes present living the more attractive. It gives you all the time that there is. You will always be able to finish what you have started. There is no fever or strain in such an outlook. We are here in life for one purpose, to get experience. We're all getting it, and we shall all use it somewhere and somehow. That was his philosophy of life. He believed in a circle of life. He believed that there was more. The exact opposite of it ends and that's finished to it never ends. This view can seem to provide an answer. But let me ask you this question. Does it provide a purpose? I agree that there must be more than the grave alone. Personally, I do not believe that it's just an end and that's it. But I contend that there must be more than just an aimless cycle of energy or just the next human attempt to better oneself that I don't return to this earth as a dung beetle. Somehow I don't believe that I'm going to return as a Christian rabbit either. Something inside of me, even as a young child, yearned for purpose and destiny, far more than the size of my bank account and what people would remember of me. And even bigger than the sum total of my best attempts to get things right so that I might just come back as a better person. There seems to be something greater than just a cold, calculated circle of life. I don't know if I've ever quoted the Quran before, but today I will illustrate a point, and I want to keep you just thinking on this point. I leave you with this to ponder. The Quran says, God generates beings and sends them back over and over again till they return to Him. Ponder that point. Maybe that circle of life doesn't quite fit. I'll repeat where I ended last. God generates being and sends them back over and over again till they return to Him. Now, it shouldn't come as a shock to you that I don't totally agree with the quote from the Quran. I have my own source of inspiration. That's this, the Bible, which I hold as not only an historical record or a good book, but the source of truth. And when we look at the concepts of life and death and how they're connected and how they work together, I found no better reference book, no better source, no better foundation than what I have found in here. And if you're regularly part of the church, I would trust that this is where you're getting your theology, your philosophy, your understanding, and your future and your eternity from. If you're visiting here this morning, I would encourage you, if you've never taken this book seriously, now is the time. Now is the time to do so. And I want to look at just a few things that are quotes from men who have found an answer to the question, what happens when we die? And I want to look at a quote from a man who made the difference for all eternity of what happens when we die. Like the Quran, the Bible agrees that God generates beings. There is an agreement there. He has created all things. Whether you choose to believe it or not, I believe He's created you and He's created me. Every human has been created in one way or another because of the will and the purpose of God. And many scriptures would lead us to be able to find that as a truth. But where they agree on the conception of man, they differ radically on the life and the end of man. As much as there is a heaven, according to the Bible, there is also a hell. It is a concept that many do not want to discuss and would quickly dismiss. How could there be such a place as heaven? How could there be such a place as hell? But whether you like it or not, these are biblical truths. Last week, a good friend of mine, Vlada, stood here and he made a statement along these facts, or along these lines. He said, facts are facts, not facts that change by how we interpret them. But facts are facts. If I'm going to believe the Bible, I have no option to believe in a heaven. I also have no option but to believe in a hell. Heaven or hell. And when we think about this, if our concept is that there is a heaven or there's a hell, there is a reckoning to happen. Actually, the heaven or hell, this was a game that you could click on online and play. And I just thought, well, actually, we're playing that now. In our lives, we're playing out with each moment, with each thought, with each decision that we make, how we answer that question, what happens when we die? Okay, we'll stay there. I'd like to take you to a verse in Scripture. It says Hebrews... Oh, we're a little bit ahead, sorry. Sorry, Peter, that was my fault. Hebrews 9:27 says, it is appointed unto man once to die, and then comes the judgment. Notice the emphasis on once, then judgment. The Bible is clear that there is a purpose to life, and that how we live, what we do about God in this life, radically affects what happens in the next. I read a quote. It said, living isn't difficult, dying isn't hard. The transition is the difficult part. And actually, the transition is what takes place out of what happens when we're living. That then brings us to that transition of what happens after we die. Paul was an early biblical writer, and he challenged everyone's concept by saying something that shocked the listeners, and I suspect that in its brutalist form, if we were honest, shocks us as well. Because he said in Philippians 1:21, to die is to gain. It's something better. He said, for to me to live is Christ, and to die is to gain. How can it be gaining something that most people fear and do everything they possibly can to avoid? Advances in modern medicine, the attempts to avoid death at any cost, but yet to die is to gain. It's a shocking statement. It is a statement that can only be made by someone who has a different, not just worldview, but eternal view, who can make that sort of statement. His perspective of living and dying was actually in perfect balance and harmony. And I want to explore the statement of Jesus. Maybe this will help. Now, Peter, thank you. In John 14:6, Jesus made a statement. And I heard someone speak of Vlad's preach last week when he was talking about if there's a God, why is there suffering? And they said, well, he answered that by preaching Jesus. I want to bring us to the same person. To a man who, according to the Bible, gives us the answer. Gives us a solution to that transition between life and death. Because Jesus uniquely did die. But he also uniquely rose again. So that we could have life everlasting. A joy and a hope. And because Paul knew this, he could say with all certainty and confidence, to die is to gain. It is not the end. It is only but the beginning. It is not something that gives you another cycle that you go around and round and round again and somehow you end up where you started. A bit like the London Eye. Well, you hope that you end up where you started when you get onto a Ferris wheel. Famous comedian once said, he said, life is interesting. I'm not sure if I'm enjoying it or just every time I go around it makes me a little bit more ill. I believe I go around once. And because of what one man has done for me, my eternity is secure. I want to look at this verse. I want to pull it apart just a little bit. This is what Jesus said about himself. This is not someone else's concept. This was not an interpretation of someone else. This is what Jesus said about himself. And in this is the answer to what happens when we die. He said, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. There's a phrase in the English, when we look at grammar in English, called imperative. An imperative is a command. It is a directive. There's also within the English language what we call a definite article. Now, definite article in the English language is the most used word in the English language, the word the. Many languages don't have articles in them. They don't need them. They don't use them. But in both Greek and English, there is some similarity that we have the word the. Not just any, but the. Specific, focused, the one and the only. Some of you will know that in the last week or so, I fulfilled a 30-year dream. For some of you, it would be a boring dream to be fulfilled. For me, it was an exciting dream to be fulfilled. And then about 30 years ago, I began playing guitar. I still play nothing in the league that Simon does. Isn't that beautiful singing and playing this morning? But I always wanted a genuine Gibson guitar. Now, I've worked my way through. I've had copies. Well, actually, I've had copies of copies that were called Les Pauls. But they were cost all of about £100. It wasn't just my playing that made them sound bad. That helped or didn't, whichever way you look at it. And they lasted for a little while. I then upgraded a few years ago to a Gibson Epiphone. They're made by Gibson. They run them off at the factory at about $2,000-$3,000 a week. And they play quite nicely. Well, I thought they did anyways. But when I first started, a friend of mine had a genuine Gibson guitar. He let me play it. Now, it sounded bad when I played it because I was just learning, but he could make it sing. He could make it come alive. He could make that guitar do things that only that guitar could do. And last week, after 30 years of waiting and putting things aside, I bought a genuine Gibson guitar. If anybody wants a really good Epiphone, I've got one for sale in a case with new strings on and great action. I bought it. I played it in the people's lounge who was selling it. I bought it and I brought it. Before I ever got home, I was driving past the building and I realized that the band for Sunday morning were practicing, putting together the songs for the first of our series. And I knew that Simon was playing. So I stopped the car and I came in and I took it out of the case and I handed it to Simon. And he played the next song in their practice. I don't think that guitar, that specific guitar, ever sounded as good before. And as he hasn't played it again, it hasn't sounded so good since. But I was able to sit at the back and listen to Simon play it. And because it was the real thing, the tone, the sound, just the whole feeling of it was just a beautiful experience. It is the guitar for me. It is not just a guitar. It is the guitar. It is the real thing. I am. Jesus started with two words in Greek that would have made every listener sit up. Because in Greek, in the verb am, you don't have to put the word I in front of it. It's implicit within the word. You can tell if it's singular or plural just by the ending of the verb. You can tell who it's referring to. But if you put the pronoun I in front of it, you're adding evidence to it. So Jesus could have said, Amy, one word, I am. But actually he said, Ego, Amy, I am. And immediately people would have stood up because they knew he was making a point. Also, he was referring back to an Old Testament reference when they said, Who are you, God? And he said, I am. So Jesus right here, he's stating something very clear. I am. And people began to deal with things of eternity. Secondly, he says, I am the way. Notice he doesn't say a way. He says, I am the way, a definite way, the definite article, the way. I am the way. If you want to know the way to all answers, this is the way. I am the way. I am the truth. It's not a matter of there's a bit of truth here and a bit of truth there and a little bit over there. It's not a matter of that this might be the truth or this could be the truth. I am the truth. Not even just a philosophy or a theory or a religious observance. But Jesus, I am. ego eimi. I am the way, the truth. And what's the third one? I am life? No, I am the life. I am the source, the instigator, the sustainer, and the completion of life for you. I am the life. I started by saying our understanding of what happens when we die will affect how we live. If we truly believe that Jesus, the I am, is the way, the truth, and the life, it affects every part of our being, our yesterday, our today, and our forever. But he doesn't stop there. He carries on with blunt and bold and in-your-face statements. The next one, no one. He leaves no one else to fill that. He doesn't give us any leeway. No one, not even one person, not even a future, past, or present person. No one, what? Comes to the Father. If you read the context, he's actually talking about life and death issues in the context of this. He's not just talking about me having some relationship with a God. He's talking here about the future eternal purpose of coming to the Father. In the Old Testament, coming to the Father was a dangerous thing to do. It was a dangerous thing to do because there was a God of wrath, there was a sinful man, and there was a chasm in between. But Jesus came to be the way, the truth, and the life. That when we come to the Father, when we come to Him face to face, when I stand before the God of all of creation and of the universe, the God of my past, of my present, present, and my eternal future, I have a way. Jesus. Actually, I have the way. I have the truth. And I have the life of Jesus. That means that I can come to the Father. Notice that last phrase. No one comes to the Father, and then he just seals it at the end with one more. But by whichever way you jolly well want to get there. No. He says, but by me. Can I contend with you this morning that there is much more than a gravestone on a hillside that ends in dust and ashes? And as I stood in a graveyard yesterday with some friends of mine from Canada, looking at gravestones just down the road at the church at Blickling, you could not read the names, you could not see the dates, the weathering had taken and removed them. Who is buried there and why, I have no knowledge whatsoever. If we were to dig those graves up, as morbid as that might be, we would not find the person that was there, but a distant remembrance of them. Is that the end of them? I would contend the Bible says no. But that was the beginning of their eternity. Where that eternity is spent, is it going around and around and around and around that we might hope beyond all hope that we end up as a beautiful stallion instead of a dung beetle? Or as the Quran says, at some point to return to a God? Or dare we to believe, as many have proved and tested, and as one of the quotes said, when men die, even on their face you can see eternity etched. Dare we to believe that God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, Jesus, that whoever believes in him will not perish but will have everlasting life. How you choose to live now, who you choose to serve now, prepares you for that moment when you can say, to live is Christ, but to die is gain. Is there a heaven? I truly believe so. Do I need to do anything to get there? I did. I needed to find the one. I needed to find the I Am, who is the way, the truth, and the life, so that I could come to the Father through Him. Jesus, the Son of God, who died and rose again to take care of the separation, so that I can say, to Him be all glory. We're going to worship Jesus. We're going to sing some more songs together. We're going to have an opportunity to reflect. And for those who already know this is a truth, can I say to you, the death, where is your sting? Where is your victory? It has no victory except the release into the glory of all that God has prepared for us. And as we worship, if you're here this morning and you are wrestling with the things of life and death, you are wrestling with the truth of eternity, I would encourage you, come and have a word with me or others that will be here just up on the side of the stage here. Come and join us, and we would love to pray with you. We would love to encourage you. We would love to just to help you to find, actually, far more than a gravestone, far more than a cycle that you only get dizzy in, but in a truth that will set you free for an eternity. So, Ben, if you would come and lead us into time of worship. Church, if you're struggling with any of the concepts, maybe you're struggling with things, just come and ask and pray, because the Scripture is very clear. If we lack in wisdom or understanding, if we pray and ask, God will help us with that. Before the meeting started, someone came to me and said they believe God had spoken to them about someone here who's having a real fear of death. It's a real fear of the whole thing of death and dying. And it's gripping you. And God wants to release you from that. He wants to give you a freedom, an excitement about your eternity that helps you to live life to the full. And there may be others as well. I know others have come. And in a few minutes as the band is playing, Simon, I know you had some things you wanted to share as well. You can come and share those as we minister together. But let's stand together. Let's worship our God. And if you want someone to pray with you, this is a great opportunity to make an eternal decision that has great consequences for our eternity, but even more for our life now.